Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Our guest on the Glass Half Empty podcast today is John Oran. John is a sports media reporter for Sports Business Journal, Sports Business Daily. John, have you been on this beat a while? Have you been on it longer than Deitch?
You know what? I'm not sure. We're about the same time. I started at SBJ. Yes, Monday was my 11-year anniversary at Sports Business Journal. And before that, I spent a couple decades sort of in the media business. So I've been covering ESPN for certainly longer than Deitch. But as far as being on the sports media beat, I'm not really sure when Richard started.
So you mentioned you've been covering ESPN for a while. On Monday, you dropped a really extensive piece on how ESPN got to where it is and where they hope they're going. Really, it boils down to We talk about all of the talent movement and what they're doing with their studio shows because that's where the dynamic personalities are in sports talk media. But ESPN's issues really stem from two things. It's subscriber losses and it's rising right fees. And you started your piece with the NBA package that coincided with accelerating subscriber losses. And because of how much more they paid the NBA than they were paying before, and because subscriber losses really accelerated right after they signed that deal, and that there were layoffs both in management and talent, that NBA deal really gets held up as an example maybe of where ESPN could have gone wrong.
Yeah, and so you know, Ryan, the reason that I wanted to do this story and is just because I wanted to document, like, everybody's talking about, you know, rights fees are going up and people are cutting the cord. And so I just kind of wanted to go back and take a look at various deals that ESPN cut and seeing what they could have done differently. And what I found to be surprising, people that, you know, the critics of ESPN will take a look at everything, even all the way back to 2008, you know, when they outbid Fox for the BCS, like they paid too much money for that. But when I talk to ESPN executives today, there really isn't a deal that they would have done differently because with their subscribers being shed, they feel that they need to grab these rights for the sports that they want, the NFL, the NBA, college sports, baseball as well, and that they're going to be set. In regardless of how we consume video in the future, they're going to be set because they own the rights. And so they embarked on that strategy. They sort of knew that strategy, I think, was going to lead to some pain, especially this year as the NBA deal kicked in. But I think one of the things that they're banking on, and something that I'm not nearly close enough to guess at, is 5 years down the line when we look back, ESPN's current management team thinks that we're going to be looking back and kind of laughing at my story, like saying, like, you know, boy, ESPN is now the 800-pound gorilla again.
That's certainly the impression that they give off when you talk to them about any of these issues. They really say, oh no, we're not playing defense. We're ESPN. We're always on offense. We're going to be really big forever. And they are going to be really big forever. They have a gigantic lead over anybody next to them, especially in the cable space. Although it would be really interesting if you added up Fox Sports plus FS1 and tried to do that versus ESPN. But that's kind of unknowable for our purposes right now. You mentioned on the podcast that had joined the piece that we really don't know where the floor is with subscriber losses. And you could possibly foresee a day where the leagues are like, listen, you guys don't have the reach that we need to maximize our audience. Even if you're going to pay us more in the short run, we don't think this is a solution for us. What do you think, or how do you, what would the floor of subscriber losses have to be before the league started to maybe worry about being not just on ESPN, but on cable television?
I mean, that is the billion-dollar question, but it's almost like a sense of deja vu, Ryan, because, you know, back when did the NBA leave NBC? I think that was right around the year 2000. Actually, maybe it was 98. Whenever it was, they were the first ones to say goodbye to broadcast TV and hitch your wagon to cable television. Back before cable television was like, back before people knew how big cable television was. And that was exactly what they were going through. The broadcast networks were saying, you're giving up, you know, our reach. You're giving up our gigantic audiences for a couple of extra dollars. And so now it's come full circle. And with with cord cutting and whatnot, there's going to come a time where maybe not even the broadcast networks, maybe it's going to be Amazon that's going to go to, let's say, Major League Baseball. You know, they're up in a couple of years, and they say, like, look, if you come with us, our reach expands even beyond the United States. Like, we go international. So you know, we're not constricted by, you know, country borders, by the U.S. borders. So that's going to be what's going to be interesting to see, because ESPN, especially as long as it's with Disney, is always going to have a ton of money to spend on the rights that it really wants.
That's true. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the NFL rights. First of all, Thursday Night Football is sneakily coming up after this season, and it's going to be fascinating to see. I wonder if, like, Turner would get involved, or if the NBC and CBS would keep the same structure they have. That'll be interesting. And then with Monday Night Football, I know that they wanted to prevent these rights from ever coming to bidding. They did not want, like, NBCSN or the FS1s of the world to get Monday Night Football pride away from them. But the fact of the matter is, they're paying $800 million more per year for their NFL package than anybody else is getting. And they're getting a worse package, certainly, than NBC. And I'd argue they also have worse packages than Fox and CBS. And you have to think that, given the amount they're paying, they'd at least like to get better matchups than the NFL has been giving them the last few years.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, when they first did the deal, and for the first several years, they would always talk about the sort of nebulous highlight rights that they had, that they would use to seed all their afternoon programming. And, you know, now that the iPhone is as ubiquitous as it is, how much are those highlight rights worth? They seem to have cratered in value, in my opinion. So that, you know, but that's sort of the benchmark now. I can't, there have been times where rights fees have come down. I can't see that happening to the most popular league in the United States at this moment of sort of, you know, media upheaval. So it's going to be interesting to see who else would be able to get up into ESPN's stratosphere up there. And, you know, the one thing about the NFL, though, that I find particularly interesting is that they were never seduced by cable television. And so even though they're going and doing Yahoo and Twitter and Amazon, they are a broadcast first league. They're the only broadcast first league in the United States. Every single game that's played in the regular season is on broadcast television, at least in market. And so that's, you know, the NFL has made the decision that they like the reach, and it's hard to say they've foregone cable dollars because they're still getting them, but they're tied to traditional linear broadcast television. I don't see that really. I would be surprised if that changed.
When they dip their toes into the water of, okay, we're going on Amazon, we're going on Facebook, we're going on Netflix, for a while it's going to be, if let's say they take some games off of TV and they carve out a package for these, it's going to be the table scraps. It's going to be like Bills Jaguars and games like that, that the networks want least, at least until the NFL figures out if people are going to shift the medium where they consume the games.
Yeah, but that Bills Jaguars game, you can bet big money that that will be on local over-the-air broadcast in Buffalo and Jacksonville as well.
That's a good point. So one of the things that always gets brought up in ESPN's future competition with those digital-first companies is their partnership or acquisition of BAMTech. Can you explain in layman's terms what BAMTech means for ESPN?
Yeah, so BAMTech for ESPN is ESPN's attempt to try to future-proof itself. And so what they're going to be able to do with this BAMTech, you know, I can't really explain it in layman's terms, sorry, but ultimately when they are going to help ESPN deliver something that ESPN is going to sell directly to consumers. And it's what we call the over the top package. And so you will be able to pay like $10 a month to have this content streamed to you. That's launching at the end of this year. It's launching in the fourth quarter of this year. And we're still waiting to see what the channel lineup's going to look like. Not the channel line, the program lineup's going to look like. It's not going to be what's on ESPN. It's not going to be what's on ESPN3. But it is going to be, you know, if you're a rugby fan, you're probably going to pay, you know, $10 a month to see it because it's going to have a lot of rugby games, a lot of international soccer games. If you're a cricket fan, you'll be able to get in there. And I think right now they're testing this because if, you know, what we were talking about earlier, if the cable industry, like if the subscriber loss in the cable industry goes down to, let's say, 50 million, which would be disastrous, you know, ESPN needs something else that goes direct to consumer that they can put a lot of their programming to. And this is almost my view of it. They would never say this. My view of it is it's almost like a placeholder in case that happens.
It would be fascinating if it did. For the time being, one thing that people don't mention is when they lose subscribers, everyone is like, okay, they're losing this much money. But I liken it almost to the tobacco industry where for a while they might be able to raise prices on their existing customers and lose a lot less revenue than we're thinking in subscriber losses. Because they've been going like even like a couple years ago, people were really complaining that ESPN was $6 a month for affiliates, and now it's over $8. What do you think the ceiling is of what they can charge with this?
I think it's going to continue to go up. Listen, the one thing, the cable and satellite and telco operators are in a bind here, in my opinion, because if it weren't for ESPN and my RSNs down here in DC, I personally would have cut the cord a decade ago and binge watched everything on Netflix. My personal viewpoint, and I think it's a view that's shared by a lot of distribution executives, and certainly is shared by a lot of ESPN executives, is that sports is the one genre that is holding this multi-billion-dollar cable television business together. And if all of a sudden they went without the sports programming, that wouldn't exist anymore. And you would see cord cutting accelerate to such a degree that it would really harm, in my opinion, some of the distribution numbers.
So a couple weeks ago, ESPN had this management shakeup where Connor Schell took over the digital operations that John Cosner was overseeing. Rob King, Stephanie Drewley, and Norby Williamson no longer reporting directly to John Skipper. And Burke Magnus, he takes over BAMTech as part of his responsibility. What do you think the biggest practical application of this is in terms of what we see in ESPN Digital and what we see on ESPN TV?
I think this was really just a way for Skipper to streamline his direct reports. And so You know, everybody talks about Connor's promotion. That was probably, I mean, that was the biggest news to come out of it. But Connor Shell is not the number two. I don't know who the number two is, but right now, you know, John Skipper, you know, let's say he leaves in 4 years. He is set up now that, you know, one of three people internally will be able to replace him. There's Justin Connolly, who runs all the affiliate distribution. He's a guy that negotiates with all the cable operators and satellite operators, and he has a big job over there. There's Connor Shell, who now runs basically all programming everywhere. And there's Burke Magnus, as you said, who oversees BAMTech, and he's the guy that now goes in and negotiates all the rights deals with the leagues. And so the management shakeup just made it. John Skipper had like 10 people reporting to him, and now he has so much fewer. And those are the three rainmakers over at ESPN right now.
This is a little bit of like a macabre subject, but there are big layoffs this year. You have to assume that it's going to be the new normal for them, where they're going to be shedding talent, maybe even every year. And if you look at like what happened with these management things, all of like the department, like lieutenants, they have like their guys or their women who are like the favored talents. And if you're somebody who spent the last 5 or 10 years becoming somebody who was one of like Cosner's go-to people, I think that this management shakeup could be concerning to some of them.
I think that's possible, but I also don't think necessarily that ESPN's in this cycle where they're going to have layoffs every year. I mean, they may have one more round, maybe two more rounds of it, but I think that where ESPN is right now is that there are two things that are happening. One is, back when Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sports Network launched, there was a run on talent, and ESPN did not want any of their talent to go to Fox Sports 1 or NBC Sports Network because they didn't want to even validate them. So their salaries for on-air talent went through the roof, and you saw a lot more agents get involved in the business, and they got really high. And I think what we saw just a couple months ago was just a market correction to that. That's at least that internally at ESPN, that's what they're saying. And it's like, you know, they were paid artificially high, and that sort of, we want to talk about a bubble, that's where the bubble really existed. And then on the other side of it, you have, you know, this was the first year of the new NBA deal, which paid about three times more on an average annual basis than previously. So that's just in terms of corporate profit and corporate revenue, that's a huge bump up of cost. And so next year, the increase isn't going to be as big. And so they'll be able to moderate that more. So this was the year that, you know, the NBA deal would have affected ESPN. But moving forward, you know, that's already built into all the budgets, and all the increases are a lot more sort of moderated, which is sort of modern day like business economics of sorts.
But a lot of these talent layoffs, at least on the face of things, they weren't even necessarily cost cuts. You reported that several talents had just years left on their deals, and it's been 2 months now, and we haven't seen one person of those 100 people at ESPN who were laid off announce that they got a new job.
Yeah, and I'm speaking out of my depth, so I have to choose my words a little bit carefully on this. But there's, in terms of like corporate finance, like even though they're paying them for the next like 5 years in some cases, like they're able to like get them off their books, or like they sort of shift the money around elsewhere, so it looks, that it ends up making their books look better. So I mean, the layoffs, even if they're still paying them, still is considered a cost-cutting measure by ESPN. Did I explain that well at all? I don't understand it.
they can like account as an accelerated loss. So everybody knew 2017 was going to be bad because of the new NBA deal. 2018, they think they're starting fresh.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point entirely. Thank you. I need an editor on this pod. You did a great job there, Ryan. I appreciate that.
So, switching over to Fox Sports, they did yesterday. They announced a decision where they were laying off about 20 digital staffers, and they're making their website all video. This has been a transition that's been coming. I got to choose my words really carefully here because I'm really rooting for FS1 to succeed because, first of all, my boss, Jason McIntyre, is an on-air talent there. And I think the sports media ecosystem is just better when there's more competition. And that's a tide that lifts all boats if FS1 can be a very successful network. But within that disclosure, I hope this web venture does not succeed for them because I'm a writer and I like to read. And I shudder to think if everybody goes to this direction of all video, there's a big value to the written word that isn't being extracted with advertising money. And my philosophical belief about this big video push that's happening everywhere is that there are a lot of shaky video metrics that are driving how much advertisers believe that these videos are getting viewed by real people. And if we're talking about like what seems like a bubble, it feels like advertisers shifting all their money into web videos seems precarious.
Yeah, I look, as a print guy, I follow you. I'm not going to actually come out and say I'm rooting for them to fail, but I'm rooting for the printed word to make a comeback. But I think the problem that Fox faced is, you know, they tried to take on ESPN when at launch, you know, by launching news program. They were going to take on SportsCenter with their version of SportsCenter, but remember, the Fox Sports Ones was going to be the fun Sports Center. And I think they realized what ESPN has realized and what the newspaper industry has realized for the past 30 years, 40 years. Like it's an expensive proposition to do news. And I think that's sort of where Fox is. It's like, do we even want a skeleton crew to do the game right after, do we just want to go and hit highlights? I have to say that for me, one of the more sobering parts of the researching the ESPN story was when I spent game five in Bristol on ESPN's campus for the NBA Finals game. And that was a closeout game. And there were two conference rooms. They are filled by millennials. There are like two dozen millennials there, and they were cutting videos for .com. They were updating their social media feeds. They were doing alerts that were going out, and the amount of traffic each of these got it is by a factor. It's an incredible percentage higher than a story one of the laid off reporters would have written that would have been posted on ESPN.com. So you can kind of see why these media companies are sort of migrating, you know, away from the printed word into something that, you know, you can seed it with lower cost millennials. You can get higher traffic and even more engagement. I'm rooting for the printed word, but that was pretty sobering for, you know, Gen X guy to walk around and see.
Do you remember when David Carr referred to Brian Seltzer as like a robot coming to take his job? That's what it sounded like when you just described that.
I know. And Brian Seltzer, by the way, he would have been an old guy. Like, what's going on here? Like, you got to continually adapt. But I was just looking around with my mouth agape. It was it was interesting to see.
So FS1 and ESPN are both launching new morning shows. FS1's is with Nick Wright and Chris Carter in the fall, and ESPN is going to be with Mike Greenberg, and my understanding is like a permanent ensemble cast of characters, and that's going to begin in early 2018. Where are the audiences for these shows going to come from? Like, what do you think the benchmark of success is for them?
It's different for each one. I mean, I don't have in front of me, but I would imagine Fox Sports 1's morning programming right now is well under 100,000 viewers. And I don't know what it is, but I would think the benchmark for success for their morning show would be probably right around that 100,000 viewers. Like if you double what they currently get there, I mean, that's not a bad proposition. Greenberg's a little bit different. I mean, ESPN brings in a hefty audience still. Greenberg is a well-known name, and he's leaving a hugely successful, you know, radio show that that anchored ESPN Radio, a big part of ESPN's business. So I think that you know, there's his viewer figure would have to be, I would think, almost 5-6 times higher than what Fox Sports 1 puts out. I don't want to throw out numbers because I really haven't researched it, but they would expect a much higher, much higher number of viewers to watch Greenberg than the Fox Sports 1 one.
I would say 50 to 60,000 viewers a day would be considered a success for Carter and Wright for this fall. For Greenberg, I think they have to, they can't just have flat year-over-year viewership of what the SportsCenter AM was like in 2017 versus 2018, because like with the Lindsay Zarniak SportsCenter, they made a decision, okay, this show is not working for us. We need to switch to something else. So if it's flat year-over-year, when they're paying Greenberg a reported $6.5 million, they're moving the studio to New York, which is very expensive, and they're going to be paying three other people on that show, potentially seven figures. They have to have growth, I believe, in order for that show to be construed as a success, especially when, as you mentioned, they're breaking up a very profitable radio franchise in order to get there.
Yeah, flat is different now than it was 5 years ago. You see ratings, you know, especially for these studio shows going down. I would agree with you that they would want to see some growth. And personally, I would be shocked if they didn't. I think that I find Greenberg to be a talent generates ratings. So I would expect there to be growth. But I don't think that, you know, you also have to look at in terms of ad sales that they get with that. And I think that ESPN has made this decision, and it's a long-term view. And so I'm not going to get exercised over what the numbers are for the first, you know, 6 months or so.
Real quick, I wanted to talk about the possibility of a Cubs network. You wrote in your year-end predictions for 2016 that the Cubs might announce that they're going to launch a new network, but you believe that they're ultimately going to stick with Comcast at the 11th hour and not wind up launching their own network. What was your rationale behind writing that?
My rationale behind writing that was because Comcast currently owns the rights to the Cubs. Well, the Comcast Sportsnet actually is partly owned by all the teams in Chicago, just about. And if the Cubs branch out on their own, then they have to go back to the dominant cable operator in Chicago, who they just spurned and said, "Hey, by the way, we want you to pay us an ungodly fee to carry us." I think you'll end up seeing exactly what happened in Los Angeles with the Dodgers, and you'll see Comcast say no. You'll see a lot of other people saying like, "We can't afford you," and the Cubs will ultimately end up with Comcast.
So, as you mentioned, a bunch of the Chicago teams, which is the Blackhawks, the Cubs, the White Sox, and the Bulls, each own 20% of CSN Chicago. Comcast owns the remaining 20%. Because the Bulls and White Sox are both owned by Jerry Reinsdorf, that means that he effectively owns 40% of the network. I think that if the Cubs and the Blackhawks got together and really united in their desire to cut Jerry Reinsdorf out of their package, when the Cubs and Blackhawks are better run teams on the field objectively over the past decade than the White Sox and the Bulls have been, that could create real issues for the cable providers in dragging their feet.
Possibly. If that happens, Ryan, and then that's a good prediction to have, I would expect that they would cut Comcast in, and Comcast would say, like, okay, we'll launch another channel, and I'll be a, 20% owner of that channel then.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on, John. We really appreciate your time. Again, this is John Oran, sports media reporter for Sports Business Journal and Sports Business Daily. Please check out his piece on how ESPN got to where it is and where they believe they're going. And hopefully we'll do this again a couple months down the road.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ryan. Had a lot of fun on this one.
All right. Bye, John.
Bye.
Familiar touch turned stranger.